Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
I'm very optimistic. Demand is at a 33-year high right now, and there's no indication that it's going down.
Colin Woodall, CEO, National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
And you talk about beef prices. Beef prices are high, but you know what? Americans are paying them. They're still paying them. So we're excited about that because we're moving every piece of product that we put out on the shelf. The concern, of course, is how do we get more of that dollar into our pocket as cattle producers? And that's why we are looking at ways to expand capacity, get more packers out there, especially small regional packers, provide more options to have cattle process, but also make sure that we have workers in all of these plants to keep them working at 95-100% capacity. So that way we can take the cattle we have, get them to the consumer in the form they like it via steaks, and allow us to get a little bit more of that value. And that is something that NCBA is working on every day.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We had a very large attended live cattle marketing committee yesterday afternoon here in Houston.
Jerry Bone is a livestock producer from Kansas and the outgoing president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
And we came in with the expectation of trying to come together on a solution or a reaction to the challenges that we've had the last couple of 3 years with fed cattle prices being in the tank, beef prices being record high, processor margins being extremely large, and none of it flowing back to cattle producers. And so that angst and anger and emotion has ruled for probably the past 2 years. And so, in July of 2020, when we had our mid-year meeting in Denver, there was a very heated debate for over 6 hours between, and we were about equally split. About half of our association wanted us to come out in favor of asking the government to step in and mandate a certain amount of volume of negotiated trade in the fed cattle market. You had the other half of the association said, we don't want that. We need to solve it internally. So what came out of that was a resolution that authorized NCBA to form a task force to look at ways to encourage increased negotiated trade and price discovery and market transparency. We came up with what we call a 75% triggers program, and it was the goal was to increase negotiated trade, particularly in the southern plains of Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, and Kansas, to a lesser degree in Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska, and Colorado. So this task force set about doing that, and in January 1 of 2021, we started this process, and there was two different aspects to it. One was the producer part of trading more cattle on a negotiated basis. The other part was on the buy side of trying to get the four major packers to participate in the market and help us in doing some more price discovery. So as we went through the year, the volume of negotiated trade did increase, particularly in the southern plains. Part of that increase was a move to go to a negotiated grid basis, which kind of solved two problems. One, it helps establish some negotiation and some price discovery. And two, it still allowed producers to sell those high grading and high quality cattle and get a premium for them. So the program ultimately failed because we were unable to get the business models of some of the major packers to change enough to meet the required volume of trade that we asked them to do. So that trip triggers, and as a result, then people came back to this convention here in Houston with the intent of making a decision. Does the association want to go back to mandatory negotiated trade and have the government involved in that, or do we want to go in a different direction and solve it itself? The association spoke loudly yesterday. About 75-80% voted to not go forward with any mandates from the government, and that we would continue to work on transparency, price discovery, those kinds of things as an industry internally.
And says he understands that emotions are running high.
And that's one of the challenges. We do have a very diverse industry. We have some very large operations. We have a lot of small operations. And trying to come up with a one-size-fits-all solution is extremely hard. And, we all operate in different types of environment. You have the climate, the tropical climate in the southeastern part of the country. You come out here in the west and southwest, and we're in a desert climate. And it's really, really hard to say we've got a solution that's going to meet everybody's needs. It's just not possible.
It's Agriculture Today.
Aqua Yield regional agronomist Dr. Tracy Carrillo talks about using NanoPro to improve your burn down.
NanoPro is a nanoliquid technology that grabs the molecules of your burn down herbicides. It enhances the delivery of your herbicides, making them more efficient. You oftentimes see a 3-to-1 return on investment. This will stretch your chemical use up to 30%, which means you're saving more money, especially with the availability and volatility of chemicals these days.
Find out more at aquayield.com.
For years, Texas cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. Next Gen brand cottonseed from AmeriCotton. Next Gen varieties bred specifically for West Texas growers have performed year after year, even in harsh conditions. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Contact your local Next Gen representative or dealer today to learn more about varieties suited for your needs. Next Gen, your West Texas partner for performance cottonseed.
This is Agriculture Today.
We found on average about 625 to 650 a bushel is where break even is.
Chandler Gould is CEO of the National Association of Wheat Growers.
And so the prices that we're seeing right now are great. We know that our producers are receiving money from the marketplace, which is where they want to receive their benefits from. And then, you know, that comes from a lot of stuff. I think the issues over between Russia and the Ukraine are helping to drive that up. We also saw an uptick in demand domestically. And, of course, the strong reliance on that 50% of the wheat that we export to our major trading partners. So all in all, it's a very good day in the wheat industry today.
If we talk about trade, we have to talk about challenges. Gould says India is one.
India is definitely one of our larger issues that we are combating on the international trade front right now. We've already asked the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate have sent two different letters. 28 members of the House sent a letter a year ago to Secretary of Agriculture at USDA and to USTR Ambassador Tai, requesting that we bring a WTO case against India. And then in December, Senator Bozeman from Arkansas, who's the ranking member on the Senate Ag Committee, sent a parallel letter both to Vilsack and Tai, requesting that we bring a WTO case against India because of their domestic supports that they're giving their own wheat and rice growers. And by our calculation, the U.S. wheat and rice industry are losing about $600 million a year in lost sales due to these non-compliant payments going to domestic growers in India.
But actually, the road, according to Gould, is already paved because of past work with China.
Exactly. Literally the exact same case. So you would think that we could maybe fast-track this, but, you know, nothing's ever fast-tracked when you bring in the WTO and other countries' governments. But the U.S. brought a case under the Trump administration against China for the exact same two commodities, for rice and for wheat, because China was subsidizing their producers beyond what the WTO limit would allow. And both countries, China and India, were not importing as much rice and wheat that under their WTO obligations. And so on two fronts. One, the India case is very similar, so we already know have a record that we should win there and a precedent. But the other concern is China has still not come in compliant with the case that they lost against the United States. So really, when you add those two together, we're talking billions of dollars of lost sales for U.S. wheat growers.
But now we're into a different challenge with the World Trade Organization, where no appeals are being heard.
The WTO definitely needs some work, and you're exactly right. It basically became dysfunctional under the Trump administration because we kept it blocking all of the people nominated for the appellate body there. We continued to work and encourage the Biden administration to appoint people so the appellate system there could begin working, because just as you pointed out, even if they did bring a case against India, if India wins or loses, we know that it'll be appealed at least one time. And right now, that would be a dead standstill. And then also having the WTO not functioning properly due to a lack of people is keeping us from being able to enforce the ruling onto China. So it is really in the United States and the U.S. wheat growers' best interest and all of agriculture's best interest to get the WTO back up and running on its feet so that it can continue to enforce these international regulations to make sure we have a level playing field.
It's Agriculture Today.
Now is the time to sell. Demand for used equipment is high, and Purple Wave Auction can help you reach the largest community of online buyers. Whether you have a single item or an entire fleet, Purple Wave Auction offers a hassle-free way to sell your equipment. Visit purplewave.com. Straight, simple, sold.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turn roads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The Biden administration has rejoined the Paris Agreement. I think this is an opportunity for us to look on how we work together, not only in this country, but around the world. That means reducing our carbon footprint as it relates to emissions in ways that make sense, working with industry. And that's part of the reason for this subcommittee hearing.
Jim Costa is a representative from California. He's also the chairman of a House Ag subcommittee on livestock.
To figure out how we deal with the impacts and ensure that we have measurable outcomes. I can tell you that in California, we've been doing that for a number of years. I'm glad that we have some witnesses from California that can share their experiences with us today. I think we all feel very strongly about agriculture and its important role in putting food on America's dinner table every night. It is, as I think many of you have heard me say time and time again, a national security issue. And I think agriculture, certainly the folks that I work with at home, understand that the issue of climate change is important. Water and the snowpack that we get in California's mountains are critical to our sustainability of having adequate water supply. And yet we see increasing changes of our snowpack and our water availability. And, of course, a result of that in part is the horrific fires that we've had to address in California. But like all farmers, I'm an optimist. I think you have to be an optimist if you're a farmer, a rancher, or a dairyman, or a woman. And I think the flip side of the value of these challenges we face is that agriculture can and is making a meaningful contribution toward reducing and offsetting emissions.
Now, at that subcommittee hearing, California dairy producer Melvin Medeiros talked about the carbon footprint.
You know, Dr. Stackhouse talked a little bit about, you know, different feeds and knowing how that rumen is going to react to the different feeds and what it's actually emitting. So in the dairy sector out here in California, we feed about 40% of our rations are byproducts. And through those byproducts, we really don't know how much emission reductions we're getting through those byproducts. So the question is still out there. And at UC Davis, there's been a lot of studies done on either oil-based additives, plant-based additives, and how that is working in reducing emissions. So we need more funding to go into that category. And then we need less restrictions from FDA when they take a look at those additives, because they're looking at that as an antibiotic and having to go through that process. It's cumbersome. It takes a long time, and time is of the essence, right? And some of that stuff, we need to streamline that process.
Now, Medeiros was actually answering questions from Virginia's Abigail Spanberger on the additives being natural.
They're either oil-based or plant-based. You know, one of them was seaweed, right? Yeah. And so when we take a look at these options, we need to streamline that process, and we need to actually put more funding towards that, because companies, when they start taking a look at the process, they're not willing to invest, right? It's taking too long. It's too expensive. So those are the avenues, because we have to remember 45% of emissions coming from a cow is enteric. Yep. And we have to remember, especially in the dairy sector, not everybody's going to be able to put a digester. And if we can target 45% of that emissions on the enteric basis, that is extremely valuable.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
One of the directors of feedlot operations here at Freona Industries, it's important for us to be partner with people that understand the business and understand the challenges we face. And as we've grown from 4 to 6 to 8 yards, Capital Farm Credit has been there every step of the way. They understand the agriculture industry, understand the ebbs and flows, the trends, the economics, but more importantly, understand the cattle feeding sector, and have been extremely good partners for us to work with. And hopefully that partnership gets to solidify even more.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Well, we obviously had a very challenging drought last year, and the opportunity here is to fill up some of those gaps that we weren't able to do with the livestock forage program and other other programs. And so we'll be using that data.
So Robert Bonney is USDA's Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation, attending the Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA trade show and announcing some of the details of phase one of a livestock disaster assistance program, with payments expected to roll out in March. $750 million in aid for livestock producers.
Our goal here is to streamline this so it's as easy as it can be for producers. We also want to encourage producers to use those existing safety net tools. And so by using that data, we think that sends a message that in the future, you know, producers should think about those safety net tools. We also want to make it, you know, easy on our own staff, but we want it to be accountable. And so we understand the importance of moving here. We needed to wait till we got data in from producers on the livestock forage program, which we just got in on the 31st of January. And so we're moving pretty quick. And it's obviously of a lot of interest to producers, a lot of interest to folks up on the Hill. This will be the first tranche. We'll come back with a second wave to kind of fill those gaps. And we expect probably more than half the dollars goes out for livestock in phase one. Phase two, we'll take a little bit more time to look at ways that we can fill some of the gaps we may have missed.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack spoke by video, but Bonney was actually on stage. His takeaway?
Well, obviously, a lot of the conversation today was about climate. It was about conservation. And, you know, you all heard me up on stage. My hope is that at the end of 2 or 3 years, people will roll their eyes when I say voluntary and incentive-based, because they've heard it so many times. That's what this is going to be. We know folks out in rural have concerns about what climate policy will look like. They have concerns about what conservation policy will look like. A lot of folks in rural worry that climate and conservation policy is going to be done to them and not with them. We want to do it with them. And so if there's one message, it's about this is going to be producer-led, it's going to be incentive-based, it's going to be voluntary. And as we roll out our Climate Smart Commodities programs, it's going to be producer-led. We're going to work with agriculture. That's the best approach. If you look at what's working in conservation and the environment right now on working lands, it's about voluntary conservation. It's about partnership. And we think there's a lot of gains that could be had there.
On the next Farm Bill.
You know, one of the conversations that will clearly be on the agenda is climate, both on the resilience side and on the mitigation side. When we're talking about disaster programs, we're often talking about climate change, extreme weather, those types of things. This issue of gaps. Do we have the programs we need? And I'll give you an example. In the Klamath, when we first came in the administration in January, hearing from producers in the Klamath that they were going to have their water shut off, we didn't have a program ready to go to help them get through the season where they weren't going to be able to plant. We were able to use some flexible resources from an appropriations bill passed in 2020 to do that. But there's some gaps there. And so I suspect Congress is going to want to look at the resilience side of climate and say, okay, do we have the toolbox we need? Same thing on the mitigation side. Our hope with this Climate Smart Commodities effort is that we'll learn some things, that it'll open up a conversation with agriculture. We'll learn some things. How do we take advantage of markets? How do we bring in private investment into agriculture? And our hope is that will foster a conversation in the Farm Bill that will be helpful in thinking about how do you design incentives that work for agriculture and that work for the climate.
It's Agriculture Today.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board. With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Prior to joining the Farm Service Agency, I was a third-generation rancher on my family's operation on the Cheyenne River Sioux Indian Reservation.
Dak Ducheneau is the administrator of USDA's Farm Service Agency.
While folks don't always think of the Farm Service Agency as a conservation-focused agency, our conservation division oversees several programs that protect our drinking water, improve soil health, reduce erosion, preserve wildlife habitat, and restore forests and wetlands for future generations. Our emergency conservation programs also support producers whose operations are damaged by natural disasters. I've always appreciated FSA's commitment to voluntary, producer-focused, working lands conservation, and I'm committed to maintaining those key pillars in our conservation programs. At the same time, we have a unique opportunity to expand and in some cases reimagine these programs to bring in new and diverse partners, better address the climate crisis, and invest in the long-term health of our land and the producers who care for it.
Talks about FSA's focus on conservation.
The Conservation Reserve Program is FSA's flagship conservation program and is one of the largest private lands conservation programs in the United States. Through CRP, FSA provides program participants with an annual rental payment in exchange for removing environmentally sensitive land from customary agriculture production and planting long-term resource-conserving species. Last year, we made several improvements to increase producer interest and enrollment in CRP while strengthening the climate benefits of this program. Specifically, we adjusted soil rental rates where data supported such an adjustment, increased payments for practice incentives, increased payments for water quality practices. We also added a climate smart practice incentive for CRP general and continuous signups to better leverage this program towards climate outcomes, including carbon sequestration. Our changes to CRP have already begun to pay off. Last year, producers and landowners enrolled 5.3 million acres through signups, turning the tide of declining enrollment from the previous 4 years. The total sign-up of 5.3 million acres surpassed USDA's 4 million acre goal and reversed a trend of decreasing enrollment, and we're especially happy with our sign-up for the grasslands program, 2.6 million acres.
He was testifying recently before a House Ag Subcommittee.
I want to take a moment or two to discuss two of our disaster assistance programs that are housed within FSA's Conservation Division. First, the Emergency Conservation Program, which provides assistance to farmers to repair damage caused in natural disasters. In response to the drought, we expanded our policies to allow producers of livestock to use portable pumps to better distribute grazing in their overtaxed property because of the drought. Second, Emergency Forest Restoration Program provides payments to owners of non-industrial private forests to carry out emergency measures and to restore land damaged by natural disasters. In fiscal year 2021, we allocated $56.9 million to critical EFRP assistance, as well as $140 million to the Emergency Conservation Program.
The chief of the NRCS is Terry Cosby, talking about regional conservation efforts.
I've had an opportunity to work with this program since it came in 2014 as a state conservationist and bringing partners together to leverage the federal investment. It's worked really well. It's a great program. It continues to flourish. We have heard concerns, and I will tell you that we are addressing those. We need our partners to really continue to bring those forward to us as we talk about this. We recently announced RCPP and the new investment that we're going to make, and we think we've streamlined the process. We are working to train our field staff on how to deliver it more effectively and efficiently. And so we've heard those concerns, and we are addressing those.
It's Agriculture Today.
The formula for success is a simple one. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why cotton growers looking to improve yield potential plant Delta Pine brand cotton, featuring 100 years of proven yield potential and exclusive genetics in every bag. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Introducing the heavyweight champion of the livestock operation, Case IH Farmall Utility Series Tractors.
Farmall Utility Tractors don't just outweigh the competition. They're engineered to distribute weight where it works, from the transmission, central housing, and axles to the differentials and final drives. So add some weight to your operation and go the distance with Farmall Utility Tractors.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Agriculture Today.
After 20 years in Washington, D.C. and living in the swamp, it's nice to see the mountains every day. But it's also been a great new challenge in taking over as the CEO of this association and working not only on policy issues, but also helping craft what we're doing as a contractor to the National Beef Checkoff and to help be that spokesperson and to promote beef, it's what's for dinner. Research and everything else that we do to try to help with the consumption and the promotion of our great product.
Colin Woodall is CEO of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and talks about the tax changes we saw yesterday under a microscope today.
When we were talking a year ago, the new administration, we knew that we were going to have some tremendous challenges because not only did we have President Biden in the White House, but we had a new Congress controlled by the Democrats. We expected that tax provisions would be top of mind, and indeed, they were. As the president started rolling out things such as Build Back Better, it was clear that it was going to be Build Back on our backs as cattle producers, eliminating things such as the like-kind exchanges, 1031 like-kind exchanges, the step-up in basis, things that would devastate us as cattle producers. But we did what we always do. We went to work. We started knocking on doors, both Republicans and Democratic offices. And I'm happy to say that we have killed all those provisions, that we are not going to be faced with an increased tax bill because of President Biden's proposals. And we're very proud that we were able to do that under some very trying political environment here in Washington, D.C.
On helping others understand how ag can be a part of the solution.
And I think a great example is when you look at this administration and everything that they have done in terms of climate change. The president talks about climate change all the time. We were able to go to Capitol Hill and talk to a lot of our friends, both in the Democratic and Republican Party, and say, all right, if this is ultimately going to be about climate change, we're your solution. We are not your problem. And if these tax provisions go through as you have proposed them, there will be farms and ranches that are sold, and they're not going to be sold to other farmers and ranchers. They're going to be sold to developers. And the first crop of houses that a piece of land grows is the last crop it ever grows. And if they truly want to be successful in helping the president on climate change, then they need us there. They need the open space. They need growing grass and grazers grazing that grass. And that helped us put a wedge in the Democratic Party and get several Democrats, especially on the House side, to understand what this means to support us, and we won the day. And we will continue to use that strategy of just how important it is to keep people on the land.
But at the end of the day, the only voices that matter are those of the producer.
As a trade association, it's not me nor my staff that sit down and chart the course of this great group. It is the members. We are a grassroots organization. And the way grassroots works is have the members that are sitting on farms and ranches every day come to town, talk about these issues, and give us very clear instructions on how they want us to engage. That's why we have power in Washington, D.C. That's why we're successful, because it's not just my voice saying what NCBA wants. It's the producer's voice telling Congress what we want. And that's how we won the tax battle. That's how we won other battles. And so getting producers to come and be a part of our convention, there's the fun aspect, being able to go to the trade show, see your friends and neighbors, but there's the business aspect that is so, so critical, and especially so here as we talk a lot about cattle markets.
It's Agriculture Today. If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
Stock up and save on John Deere filters and packaged oil at the South Plains Implement Semi-Annual Sale. Now through February 28th, receive 10 to 12% off John Deere filters and packaged oil for large ag equipment, and 10% off compact tractor home maintenance kits and oil when you purchase filters. No payments, no interest options available on qualifying purchases. Some restrictions apply. See us for details. With 14 locations, there's a South Plains Implement near you. South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
These type of partnerships are really important because it gives us an opportunity to work with the folks, the boots on the ground, my staff, also with farmers that belong to a lot of these organizations that we are working with, alongside of. And so it's provided some great opportunity for us to hear exactly what's happening on the landscape and also partner with some organizations to get more conservation on the ground.
Chief of the Natural Resources Conservation Service, or NRCS, Terry Cosby, on EQIP and CSP.
This is really important. We know that we can't do it all on our own and by ourselves. And so the more partnerships that we have and the more investment from private organizations, I think we have a better chance of looking at how do we help with climate, drought, and all of the things that happens when we have this adverse weather going on around the country.